In mid-2024, the legendary Vera Sharov of the Alliance for Human Research Protection sent a request. She asked if my husband Mark and I would write an essay concerning the perversion of science for her companion book to the documentary Never Again Is Now Global. The task for our chapter was to unmask the viral paradigm and bid farewell to virology in non-technical language, but with citations to scientific reports. We are pleased to present the essay here for the first time in the public domain. Unmasking the Viral Paradigm by Drs. Mark and Samantha Bailey. Part 1. Why not puncture the essential fear weapon? Vera Sharov to the Drs. Bailey 2024. Why did the vast majority of people go along with the disastrous COVID-19 measures? We believe it was fear. Not just the fear of getting into trouble for non-compliance with arbitrary and draconian rules, but the belief in and imminent fear of a deadly virus. Fear is a primal human emotion, and it never fails to command attention, particularly when there is a perceived threat to health or life. Hence the COVID events were largely tolerated because microbes have long been feared. In fact, virtually all of us are raised in a world where we are taught that germs can kill us. For many, the greatest threats are thought to come from viruses, such as HIV, smallpox, Ebola, and since 2020, SARS-CoV-2. In 2020, when the media and government started talking about a novel coronavirus that could cause a serious, if not fatal, disease, most people took this as a fact. They believed that the government promoted virologists, doctors, and other quote experts had carefully made the conclusive scientific discoveries that supported their claims. It would be fair to say that only the tiniest minority examined the evidence for such claims themselves. Perhaps a significant part of the reason for this is that the evidence is mostly conjured from the depths of arcane virology papers, a place where the source material can be difficult to decipher for the uninitiated, which includes the vast majority of doctors and health practitioners. However, this is precisely where we need to go in order to establish the facts, not just about the claimed existence of SARS-CoV-2, but about the existence of all viruses. Doing so reveals one of the greatest blunders, if not outright frauds, of medical science, a virological fraud that has not helped humanity, only harmed it with its onslaught of fear-based narratives, unnecessary and ineffective vaccines, and distractions from the real causes of illness. It has also enabled vast transfers of wealth from populations to a small cabal of medico-pharmaceutical entities and their allied beneficiaries. That is why the subtitle of Virus Mania reads, "How the medical industry continually invents epidemics, making billion-dollar profits at our expense." This book, first published in 2007, is an exposé that details how the pandemic industry was nefariously created through viruses that have never been shown to exist. Unfortunately, the book has proved prescient regarding fake pandemics becoming bigger and more coordinated since its original publication. Indeed, the blockbuster for the pandemic industry, at least so far, was COVID-19, because the event encompassed most of the world's population, with the majority of countries in lockstep. It was an assault of horrendous scale on humanity's health, resources, and trust. And it all hinged on one thing, the purported existence of a dangerous and contagious particle termed SARS-CoV-2. Therefore, when it comes to the scientific considerations related to COVID-19, determining the existential status of the SARS-CoV-2 virus is by far the most important part of unravelling the apex of the fraud. So how was the world conditioned to accept the appearance of the new virus? At the start of 2020, murmurs began circulating about a brewing coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan, China. The details were sketchy and came through social media posts and stories on news platforms that were full of mystery and contradictions. Rumors circulated that the virus could attack anyone, and even relatively young people were reported to be dropping dead in the street. Comparisons were made to the, quote, SARS outbreak in 2002, a condition with a very high fatality rate of around 10%, and apparently also caused by a coronavirus. So it would not be an exaggeration to say that these rumours about a new disease caused by a deadly virus rapidly gained traction. Most of the population watched with trepidation to see what would happen. A series of statements from the World Health Organization's Director General, Dr. Tedros, then gave apparent credence to the purported events that were unfolding in China. On the 22nd of January 2020, Tedros provided the first hint that the declaration of a pandemic was just around the corner.
The decision about whether or not to declare a public health emergency of international concern is one I take extremely seriously, and one I'm only prepared to make with appropriate consideration of all the evidence. Our team is on the ground in China as we speak, working with local experts and officials to investigate the outbreak.
Then, on the 11th of February 2020, Tedros introduced the term that would shortly afterwards become a household name, COVID-19. He sent the initial warning that weapons would need to be deployed, including vaccines, and somehow knew it was a long-term event in the pipeline.
First of all, we now have a name for the disease, and it is COVID-19, and I will spell it, COVID-19. There are many basic public health interventions that are available to us now and which can prevent infections now. For instance, the first vaccine could be ready in 18 months. So we have to do everything today using the available weapon to fight this virus, while preparing for the long term using the preparation for the vaccines. That's why we have sent supplies to countries to diagnose and treat patients and protect health workers.
Thus, on the 11th of March 2020, there was no real surprise when Tedros declared that there was a pandemic.
Pandemic is not a word to use lightly or carelessly. It's a word that, if misused, can cause unreasonable fear or unjustified acceptance that the fight is over, leading to unnecessary suffering and death. We have never been before seen a pandemic sparked by a coronavirus. This is the first pandemic caused by a coronavirus.
The announcement gave the WHO's 194 member states the green light to unleash their, quote, available weapons to fight this virus. Within weeks, governments everywhere were subjecting their populations to civil rights suspensions, lockdowns, face masks, and a daily dose of fear messaging through government announcements, shamelessly parroted and amplified by the corporate media, as well as most big tech platforms. Despite having no evidence that there was any new health crisis in their communities, very few people offered any resistance to the unprecedented and draconian measures. Even fewer offered any resistance to the notion that there was a coronavirus on the loose, as described by Tedros and the WHO's acolytes. Before examining the claimed source evidence for the existence of the virus said to be responsible for COVID-19, It is instructive to outline some of the prima facie problems that were already apparent regarding the declaration of a pandemic involving the alleged new disease. A paper published in The Lancet on the 24th of January 2020 described a, quote, cluster of 41 patients in Wuhan, a city of over 13 million inhabitants, that were said to have the disease soon to be called COVID-19. The most common symptoms noted were fever, cough, and myalgia or fatigue. Abnormalities of the lungs were reported in the chest imaging of all patients, as would be expected for a diagnosis of pneumonia. In no way could it be concluded from these findings that something new had manifested itself. Furthermore, pneumonia is a very common problem in China, particularly in highly polluted cities such as Wuhan. So how was it claimed that the 41 patients had a new disease? The authors of the Lancet paper stated that by Jan 2nd, 2020, 41 admitted hospital patients were identified as laboratory-confirmed 2019 nCoV, later called SARS-CoV-2, infection in Wuhan. In essence, they claimed that a new polymerase chain reaction, or PCR test, had diagnosed the new disease. Suspiciously, this test was being used several weeks before Christian Drosten et al. Had even published detection of 2019 novel coronavirus by real-time RT-PCR in the journal Eurosurveillance on the 23rd of January 2020. It has always been clear that the PCR is not suitable in this application for determining the presence of a clinical disease. However, even on their own terms, how had the test been validated as a clinical diagnostic tool? Drosten's paper clearly did not. It was only validated as a laboratory process. Oddly, most doctors did not question how the disease and its purported gold standard test had arrived on the scene simultaneously. It smacked of fraud from the beginning. But as will be explained, the fraud goes even deeper, as ultimately a test cannot be validated against something that does not exist. Unfortunately, positive tests do make the virus appear real to many people, and there is a tendency to conclude that the same test result means that they have the same thing. It was certainly clear from the start of the COVID era that the PCR had no validity as a diagnostic tool. On the 22nd of March 2020, stability issues of RT-PCR testing of SARS-CoV-2 for hospitalized patients clinically diagnosed with COVID-19 was published in the Journal of Medical Virology. The findings showed that within individual cases, the COVID-PCR tests could fluctuate from positive to negative and vice versa over the space of 24 hours. This was during the time the patients were hospitalized, no less. Instead of declaring the tests useless, which would have probably resulted in the journal rejecting the paper, the authors suggested, "Our findings indicate that RT-PCR test results of pharyngeal swab specimens were variable and potentially unstable, and it should not be considered as the only one indicator for diagnosis." We wrote in the final pandemic that one of the few leaders to go against the international case hysteria was Tanzania's president, John Magufuli. As reported by African News on the 6th of May 2020, on Sunday, President Magufuli, who has consistently downplayed the effect of the virus, shocked the world when he said animals, fruits, and vehicle oil had been secretly tested at the laboratory. Now, take a read at some of the specific things he said had been tested. A papaya, a quail, and a goat. All of them, he said, had been found to be positive to COVID-19. Instead of admitting there might be a problem with the way the PCR was being used, the corporate media and platforms such as Wikipedia smeared Magufuli as a COVID-19 denier, even going as far as suggesting he died of COVID-19. If he was not killed, the irony remains, how could they allege the diagnosis using the same falsified PCR test that Magufuli had already demonstrated was incapable of making a clinical diagnosis? By the middle of the year, there was still no clear evidence for the claimed new disease when the Cochrane Group published a systematic review of COVID-19 on the 7th of July 2020. The conclusion of the review was of paramount significance because it stated that, based on currently available data, neither absence nor presence of signs or symptoms are accurate enough to rule in or rule out disease. This meant that the traditional diagnostic techniques, taking a careful history and examining the patient, were essentially useless in determining whether a person had the alleged new disease. There were no specific symptoms and signs to speak of, and the cases all ultimately hinged on the PCR. The facade of a supposed new disease pandemic continued the following month when the WHO published its official COVID-19 case definition on the 7th of August 2020. The document stated that a confirmed case was a person with laboratory confirmation of COVID-19 infection, irrespective of clinical signs and symptoms. In other words, it was a continuation of the loop of circular reasoning that was first created when the original 41 Wuhan patients were said to have COVID-19. A case was defined by a test, and the test defined a case. The WHO case definition was a monumental sleight of hand that disconnected the clinical condition from a case. The floodgates were now open to generate not only meaningless case numbers, but to also falsely attribute deaths to the WHO's imaginary condition. We also need to take pause here to consider the WHO's insertion of irrespective of clinical signs and symptoms into the case definition. Most people would assume that a pandemic would involve a huge number of sick people. That is, the counted cases have an actual disease. However, the confirmed COVID-19 case definition did not require anyone to be sick. It simply required them to have a positive PCR test, or in subsequent years, a positive rapid antigen test. On first glance, it may appear incredible that there could be an officially declared pandemic without any confirmed new clinical disease or any global increase in sick people. However, it can be understood by taking into account a high-level deception that took place in 2009. That was the year the WHO unilaterally redefined the definition of pandemic, and the words, with enormous numbers of deaths and illness, were suddenly excluded from the existing meaning. From that point onwards, all there needed to be was case numbers that could be defined in any way desired. All of these factors contributed to the staging of the COVID-19 event, an event that was unrelated to any natural biological phenomenon. It is why independent researchers concluded that the nature of the quote pandemic boiled down to one of testing, not one of a new disease. Even the mainstream media had difficulty hiding the fact that asymptomatic cases were the majority of the positive cases, as well as the fact that the more testing that was done, the more cases that would ultimately be found. If the tests went away, so too did the pandemic. To be continued. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com